You're listening to the Spark Radio Network, internet radio like you've never heard before. Innovation, creativity, and imagination are all said to begin with a spark. So fasten your seatbelt and take the ride of your life and listen for the spark.
You are listening to KLRN Radio, where liberty and reason still reign.
Most writers and radio show hosts know that to connect with your fans, you need to do more than just write books or record the latest podcasts. There are many different elements that go into forming an online platform, but there are also many hidden traps. To make matters worse, solid advice on how to survive the muddy waters is scarce. In the book Hidden Traps, I talk about some of the important issues of working with an online platform, highlighting traps that could put your physical or internet security at risk, or be harmful to your reputation. Are your social media posts just links with a few disjointed words making you look like someone who can't complete a sentence? Did your new website cost you more than you anticipated? Are you leaking your personal contact details across the web without even knowing it? Then you need Hidden Traps. Hidden Traps is now available in paperback and ebook from a variety of retailers, including Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Kobo. Visit blackwolfpublications.com for more details.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-783-0810 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-783-0810. Again, that's 800-783-0810.
You're listening to the Spark Radio Network, internet radio like you've never heard before. Innovation, creativity, and imagination are all said to begin with a spark. So fasten your seatbelt and take the ride of your life and listen for the spark.
You are listening to KLRN Radio, where liberty and reason still reign.
Sometimes we need to slow down and remember the simple pleasures in life. Good coffee, good books, and good company. Come on in. Take a seat. The coffee's just been brewed. Let's see who we have in the coffee shop today.
Oh, what gorgeous weather in the coffee shop! But then, of course, in Jesse's coffee shop, the weather's always perfect or nearly so. And let's see, who can I talk books and writing with as I look around the coffee shop? There's a book on a table. Must be my signal. And the title of the book is Kate's Secret by Calypso Masters. Kelly, how are you today?
I'm fine, Jesse. Thank you so much for having me in the coffee shop today.
Oh, I love guests. So why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Well, I have been writing for 30 years or so, but published since 2011. And I think I'm on the 11th book or something like that. It depends on how you count. But anyway, I write romance. I always loved romance. And so when I decided I was going to write something that I wanted to share, I went with romance. And I've been writing contemporary romance since then. I started out writing very hot books, much more hot than these are, but I've kind of wanted to write something about my home state, Kentucky, so I started the Bluegrass series, Bluegrass Spirit series, and I'm on book two, and just published book two, and starting book three, and I'm enjoying it very much.
That sounds fantastic, and one of my favorite authors, who is traditionally published and the only one I tend to reference on air because I don't want to slight any of my favorite indie authors, and I have a lot of you on the air, is Brad Thor, and he always said his advice to writers is write what you read, because you have a mini
exactly.
PhD in the subject. So I think that was a wise choice.
That's very true. And I need, I mean, life is precarious enough. I need to know there's going to be a happy ending here. I can go through hell with them, but I need to know at the end, we're going to be happy and they're going to work this out. And I get to follow them on the journey and maybe pick up some tips on how I might deal with life, you know, but it's knowing that I can be guaranteed a happy ending. That's why I choose romance. But.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about Kate's Secret?
Well, this one kind of goes back to where I had been writing in my other series. It's got a military hero. He's Army. He has just lost a very good friend, and he thinks it's to suicide, and another Army buddy. So he is kind of lost, and then he gets this dream from his friend, dream visit from his friend saying that he needs to go see his college sweetheart, Kate, and that she needs him. So, you know, he's kind of one of these guys that needs to be needed. So that sends him off on the journey to where she lives in Kentucky. He hasn't seen her in 13 years, and he arrives and finds out. Well, he doesn't find out anything for a while. But anyway, he arrives back at her farm, and things kind of ignite again, but she's kind of holding something back and he doesn't know what's going on. So then it kind of goes from there, but it's set in the Midway area, which is kind of between Lexington and Frankfort in Kentucky. It's kind of right in the bluegrass with the horses, and she's on a horse farm. And so, this one kind of has some of the traditional Kentucky type themes, but it's a lot about like redemption and forgiveness. Forgiveness is a big theme in this one. And so it, you know, just follows them on their journey to figure that out. But then on the hallmark of this series is that it has loved ones who are spirits on the other side. Also kind of, they get a point of view and they're trying to work out issues that they've either messed up while they were here or that they want to help the others, you know, to work through. And so his buddy's on the other side, as is her father, and they're kind of orchestrating things on the other side too to try to work out problems that they've left unfinished. And so it's kind of interesting to have the other perspective. You know, I've always had a kind of a spiritual link to my books, you know, with spouses who had passed on or whatever, kind of having a connection with that person still. But in this series, I actually give them a point of view and let them talk. And, you know, you get to sometimes see that what the humans think is going on is not even close, but, you know, they each kind of have their own perspective of what's happening. And so it's been a lot of fun. It's very different than what I had been writing, but it's a lot of fun.
I think that sounds like a fantastic ride to go on. And as you said, with contemporary romance, there's always a happy ending on the other side.
Exactly. And this one, I actually orchestrate a happy ending for another person on the other side. So, you know, so that was kind of interesting to get to bring a couple together or whatever on the other side. So it's a lot of fun and it's a little different. So it's not the run of the mill, you know, typical romance, but it's a lot of fun to write. So
did you do a lot of research into veteran suicide or into the military before you started writing your military-oriented characters?
In my other series, I had done a lot of there are a lot of PTSD issues, survivor guilt, and suicide issues, both military and not military. And so I had done all that kind of research, you know, working on my Rescue Me Saga series. But in this one, I'm trying to think, I don't think there was a lot of, you know, research that I had to do that was different than what I had already done. In writing the other books, I had heard from mothers who had lost sons to suicide. And so, you know, I can kind of tap into that feeling and the conversations that I've had with them. And so I didn't really have to start new research because it's sort of themes that I've covered before. And I hadn't done an actual case where someone had, you know, committed suicide or anything like that yet. But so that was different. But anyway, it was, yeah, it just kind of flows from what I know from what I'd written before. I did do a lot of research in the other books because it wasn't something that had touched me personally. But anyway, yeah, I usually do a lot of research because I love research. But in this case, it was kind of pulling from things that I had already researched.
Well, I always think in the books are well-researched, stand out, and you can tell when an author's done the research, whether it's current or they researched it for a previous book and they're using it in this one. So I think it's great that you did take the time and you reached out to mothers of those who had lost and things like that to get the emotional side, because that's not something you get out of a news article.
Exactly. And if you're writing romance, if you don't have the emotion, then you're not writing romance. So, you know, you have to touch people in their hearts. You know, they have to laugh and cry and scream along with the characters, you know. And so and I've heard from enough people to hear that that's what they're doing when they read this book. So, you know, I know that I have touched them, which is good, because you never know when you're writing it. I can sit here and bawl all I want, but I don't know how the reader's going to react. But anyway, it's kind of good to know that they do, you know, they do have that response to it. So,
once again, I think it's great. So when you were approaching publication with this book, did you hire an editor, go through beta readers? How did you get your manuscript ready for that big moment of publication?
I have several editors that I work with, and they're good at different levels, content and developmental and line edits. And so I work with them through various stages, depending on where I'm at. I brought the developmental editors in early because I had gotten, I don't know, where I had gotten to a point where I was kind of like not sure of if I had, you know, the bones of a good book, I guess. And so I brought them in and we kind of brainstormed a little bit and then went back to writing. And so then I bring in my content editor and beta readers. So I have two beta readers that kind of do content too. Like they will ask questions and tell me when they're confused and this doesn't make sense. And so that kind of helps me flesh it out more if I haven't given them enough information. And then after we've gone around several rounds, then it goes to proofreaders who I had two rounds of proofreaders this time because I don't know why I just did, but I had three at one time and then three again the next. So, but I have this perfectionist gene that, you know, for 30 years I wrote, but I didn't publish anything or even send anything off to a publisher or anything because I was just paralyzed at the thought that there'd be a mistake, you know, and what would I do? And now with digital publishing, I know, you know, I've gotten beyond that because I know I can fix things. You know, if there's a mistake, I can fix it. And I don't, you know, I don't think you can ever write one that's totally perfect. But, and I'm trying to work with that, trying to learn that. But I want it to be as perfect as it can be and as good as it can be. And my readers all know that I will just ignore deadline or a pre-order deadline or anything and just wait until I know it's ready. You know, if I'm comfortable and I think it's ready, then they can read it. So this one actually was postponed a month because I wasn't ready and it wasn't ready. And but by the time it came out, I was very happy with it and readers are happy with it. So that makes me happy. So, but yeah, I do go through, I have a huge team and I rely on them to just be honest with me. I've learned over the years, you know, who are the ones that are going to really give me honest feedback and not just tell me what I want to hear. And so they help me, you know, dig a little deeper sometimes and, you know, tell the story, you know, that needs to be told. So I have a really great team and I'm very happy about that. But I also bring in other beta readers too, I should say. I have the two that do the content stuff, but then I have others that come in later. So I don't know. I think I had like 12 people working with me on this. I mean, as far as giving me feedback as we went along. So I don't work in a vacuum. I tend to feed off of what they tell me and say and whatever too. So
I think that is outstanding because I can honestly say I have read some excellent traditionally published books, and I've read a few bad ones, and I've read some self and indie published books that are needed more editing or felt like they were written in that writer's vacuum of mine's the only eyes that will ever see this before it gets published.
Right. And I know, you know, New York publishers have a team. I mean, they take it through the process too. Maybe not the actual writing of it, but once they get it, it does go through the various state, you know, editors. And so they, you know, I kind of set up my team to be like that because I wanted to be as professional as I could be, but still be independent because that gives me more control and I can write what I want to write. And, you know, I've never published, you know, traditionally, but, and I don't really have a desire to, but I do want to do it professionally. So that's why I am bringing all the, you know, this great team together to help me each time. So
I think that's an outstanding way to put it. You may be self-published or independently published, but you are still, you take it seriously as a professional.
Exactly.
So
I've hit USA Today 3 times. So, you know, I know, you know, that I'm doing it, you know, like as well as I can, you know, I feel like that's a hallmark, you know, so I feel like really good about that, you know, that these books are, you know, loved by readers. And that's the main thing. Cause I mean, I wrote for 30 years without letting anybody see it, but now, you know, being able to get feedback and hearing what people thought of it is, it just kind of feeds your soul, you know, so it's kind of nice. So.
You have hit the USA Today book list 3 times.
Yes, I have.
Well,
with my other series, yeah.
I'd like to say congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, the first time it hit was like a week after my grandson was born, and it was like, oh my gosh, you know, it's like a great month. I mean, I've like, I got a grandson and now I'm on the USA Today list the first time, but that was back in 2012. So, but I had only been published a year, so I was blown away. I wasn't even looking at the list. Bella Andre actually tweeted me and told me that I had made the list because I didn't even notice. I wasn't even looking, you know, to expect to be on the list. So that was very exciting.
That's outstanding. Now, the old adage is don't judge a book by its cover, but everybody does.
Exactly.
So how do you get such fantastic covers?
I have awesome artists. that one was done by Linda Kuhlman. She actually doesn't do anybody else's covers but mine. But she was a friend of mine, actually. In the first year when I started indie publishing, I had no money. And I was like, if I make any money, I will pay you for this. But if I don't make money, then I'll pay you out of my first paycheck when I go back to a real job. So it was kind of like that. I had a year to prove myself. And so she did some covers for me, and they were like amazing. And I was like, you're so good, you know. But she's always done really great covers. I had a couple done by another great artist, too. So I've had really good luck with artists. But it is, yeah, you definitely have to have that cover pop, you know, in tiny little thumbprint size when people are scrolling through Amazon or Barnes & Noble or wherever. So, yeah, I've been really fortunate too. But being indie, you have to do everything yourself. So I hire good people to make me look good. So so she does a great job. I'm really happy with how she puts it all together.
I'd like to say most authors should not do their own covers, and you followed that rule. Now, I did have one who broke the rules, but in his case, he was a graphic artist, so...
Yeah, if you had an eye, and I don't, I'm not a visual person. I can write, and you know, but the visual part, you know, it takes another art talent, and it's not my talent. So, I mean, if you have it, and that's great, you know, save you some money, but if you don't, it's good to find somebody who does.
Well, I think that is wise words. Now, what made you decide that you were going to go the self-published route versus trying to find a traditional publisher?
Well, it was 2011, and I had quit my day job working at a college nearby. I had just quit because I was stressed out, and I didn't have plans to then go publish. I really didn't know what I was going to do. So for a month or so, I was, you know, kind of like, well, now what? You know, I put out some feelers, not getting any interviews. So, what am I going to do next? And of course, I had written novels for myself for 30 years. And so I thought, well, I'm going to maybe get back into my writer's group and see what's going on. And maybe I'll, publish. And at the time, I planned on like a small press. You know, I didn't think I would hit New York, but I thought, well, I have friends who have small presses. I can just see if one of them will publish something, you know. And so I went to a meeting and met Donna McDonald, who's another writer. And she had just, maybe in a month or two before that, she had just started self-publishing and was saying how amazing it was, you know, to get your book out fast and to get it to people, you know. And I thought, well, this might work, because my husband had given me basically a year to see if I could publish, get anything published or, make a living at this, basically. And then it was back to a day job somewhere. So you can't, in a year, you're not going to get a New York published book, because maybe 2 years, but I didn't have time. So I thought, well, then I'm going to do it the way, she and then some others that I met since then were doing it. And I thought, well, I'm going to give it a shot. And if it doesn't work, but this way, if I make any money, I get the money. It doesn't go to the publisher, who takes a big chunk. And since when they said that you have to do the marketing, whether you go with New York or you don't, you're going to market your book yourself. I thought, well, if I've got to do that hard work, that's harder than the writing part, I might as well make the money for it. So anyway, it just, that was May of 2011. I put out the first book, which was like an introduction to the series that I had just written. I put that out in August, and in September I put out the next book, and December I put out the next book, and I wrote for 7 months straight and did nothing else. But I knew that you have to get several books out there right away, because if they don't think that you're going to keep doing this, they're not going to give you a chance. So, and by the following January, I was making 5 figures a month selling 3 books. So that I would never have done that in New York. So, and especially not in that amount of time. So it took off really fast, and the rest is history. I've never gotten to where I think I could do better with New York, and I've heard from so many people who have tried it, who went from Indy to New York, and then they're like, man, it's not really what I could do myself. So it's good for exposure. And nowadays, with the market being so tight, it's good to have your eggs in different baskets. But so far, because I write slower, I just haven't seen a reason to take that much time out to focus on something for a publisher when I can just write what I want to write when I want to write it and put it out when I'm ready. And so that's kind of the way I went. So I think it's mostly a control thing. I like to have control. And
I think it sounds like a great strategy. I really do. Now,
I mean, it's worked out, I haven't done badly, it's even in the tight market, it's still better than I think I could do if I were with the publisher. So
what advice would you give to that writer who is considering self-publishing?
Well, the market has changed since I started. So it is very difficult. It's saturated with books. And there's also a problem at Amazon right now with fake books and books that are, in there to rack up sales that are page turns or whatever on Kindle Unlimited. So it's really hard now. Harder than it was for me, because I came in like the second year of indie publishing, like when it really exploded, 2010. And I was like in on it early on. It was a great ride until about 2014, and things kind of got slower. So because there's just so many books, and then the traditionally published started publishing their backlist. And so there were lots of great books in that mix too. And so it's really hard for readers to find you. So while I've never done Kindle Unlimited, and I don't believe in being like focused on being exclusive, I guess, to one retailer, I think for a new writer, Kindle Unlimited is probably the way to go, because people can read your book for a subscription cost and they don't have to buy it. So they can try you before they buy you. And so I know a lot of new writers are going there, you know, first to try to find fans. And then from there, maybe they'll go wide. But I want my books everywhere. I don't want to exclude people who want to read on Apple or people who want to read on Barnes & Noble. But as far as marketing goes, and of course, the tradition, like the things we talked about already, you get a good cover and you have it professionally edited. A lot of people are skipping those things, and that's not good. So you've got to put out a really top-notch product first. And then, you know, if you want to try to find a market or find new readers, that's one way to do it. Once you're established more, you can get, you know, ads in BookBub and subscription, things like that, where they will promote your book, you know, if it's free or 99 cents or that was one of the strategies I actually used back in 2012. I made my first book free and it was an introduction at the time. So, but it left them hanging on three different character storylines. And so then they wanted to go get the other books, you know. And then the next year I made book two free for like a short time on a BookBub ad. And that was my best month ever. And I only had two other books they could buy at the time, but they did. So you know, finding marketing places that will send out information or send out your book to people to buy or whatever, that is another good way. You know, anything that you can do to get exposure is good. When I started out, all I had to do was go on Facebook and talk. I mean, and not talk about my books because it's, you know, you don't want to be by my book all the time. I mean, I just went and talked about the characters or I'll talk about the process or the journey and or my family and my life, you know, and people, you know, interacted and followed and were interested. And so that made it so much easier than today when you actually have to put out ads and market and all that stuff, which I'm not particularly good at. I don't really like to do. So, you know, you have to find people who do and have them put your book out there. So it's, you know, it's harder than, I mean, I really lucked out that it was just so easy to do in the beginning, but it's trickier now because you have to wade through a lot more books, you know, to get yours to come up on top and let someone notice. So.
You made several excellent points, packed with information.
Well, and I said good luck to them. I mean, if you have a passion to write, just write. You know, like I say, I wrote for a long time and I never, you know, wrote with the idea that I was going to be a bestseller or anything like that. It's just I wrote what I wanted to write. And I tend to write books that have healing and I figured they're going to get into the hands of the people that need to read them, you know, either organically or they're, you know, whatever. Somebody will tell them you need to read this book. So, you know, if you have a passion to write, nothing's going to stop you from writing. You know, the question is, do you publish it or not? Or do you put it out there? You know, and do you go into it thinking I'm going to make $1 million? Because if you do, you probably need to do something different, you know, to make $1 million because it'll be easier somewhere else. But, you know, if you have a passion for it, that will show through. And if you write well and readers are talking about your books, which is what you want, and get the word of mouth going. It's been great. I've wanted to do this my whole life. I started in high school. So I've wanted to be a writer forever and, you know, professional, like people know I'm writing kind of thing, not just secretly in my house, but it was, you know, it took a long time to get to where I was comfortable doing that. But then, you know, once I've done it, I can't imagine. I told my husband today, even I was like, there's no other job I'm going to do. I mean, I'm 59 years old. I'm not going to another career, you know, even if it is tough times right now, you know, things are slow, but they're just slower, I should say, not terribly slow. But, you know, starting a new series is always difficult and I'm embarking on like a new genre. So it's a different type of book. And so I really, you know, once I get the third book out, something about the third book is magic. So once I get the third one out, I'll really get into more heavy marketing and that kind of thing. And probably, you know, find a new audience, because I really think this series is meant for a different reader than reads my first series. So So it's, you know, but it's still, you know, part of the fun, and I will keep doing it even if nobody reads them. I love to write, so that's what I do.
Those are outstanding words. Now, I do have a question for you. What mm-hmm. was it like to hold that first book in your hands and see your name on that cover?
You know what? I published the first book in August of 2011. I did not have them in print until over a year later, because at the time, ebooks were the thing, and everybody was doing ebooks, and that's actually where you make your money. You don't make them on print. So I was like, well, I'm not going to bother with print, because who wants to buy these huge, enormous books? Because you have to, if you're indie, you pretty much have to do trade paperbacks. They're very nice quality, but they're expensive. So people would have to pay, you know, $13 to $20 for a paperback, and I didn't think I would pay that much. So I thought, well, who would pay that for these books? Then readers kept saying, we want them in paperback for our shelves, you know, because we reread them and we want to have them up there, you know, with all our other favorite books. And so it was like December the following year that I actually put the first two, I think, out in print. And it's really cool. It's a really neat experience, because it is like you birthed this baby. I mean, I know the ebook is really great, you know, and it makes me money, but it's like, the print book is so awesome just to hold and to see, and readers will come up to me and go, I didn't know it was that big, you know, because in the ebook, they just keep turning the pages, and I write really long books. So when they get, you know, when they see them in print, they're just like, oh my gosh, it's so heavy and big. But anyway, yeah, it's really neat. You open the book and you smell it and, you know, all those things you do, you know, but it was pretty exciting. I actually did my first signing with books, because usually I just come and hand out postcards or whatever. So I was like, I set it up for New York City. I had it in a hotel. I had readers come from 5 different states to get the books, like a week before Christmas. Like, they would take time out of their lives a week before Christmas to come and do this signing, you know. But it was great. I mean, it was just awesome to have something to sign, you know, other than a postcard or something. So yeah, so that after that, I've had everything come out in print, but the only thing is, that perfectionist gene comes back in, and print just scares me a little bit, because like, once in print, you can't just upload a new file and change, you know, that paperback. It's out there. So I always delay my paperbacks just a little bit, you know. That's why this book came out, Kate's Secret came out in digital last month, ebooks, and it comes out in print this month, a month later, because I just wanted time for readers to tell me if they caught anything. And luckily, the people that have written, they all know to tell me that I don't want them to not tell me and see them, you know. So they tell me, and luckily, they've all been very minor little things. So I haven't had any major storyline issues, which is good. So I've tidied them all up, and then we sent it out to the formatter. I hire out the formatter too, and he's put it together. And so now I think the first shipment of books actually was just delivered to California. My friend just said she got them yesterday, and I will be signing them next week on Friday. Or I shouldn't say that in this interview. I will stop so you can cut that part out. But yeah, they were just delivered, so I'll get to see them when I get to California.
I think that is absolutely fantastic. And I think the fact that you take the time and you realize that you can't do everything in a vacuum is amazing. And I've met so many indie published people that say, oh, well, I wrote it myself, I edited it myself, I did this myself, and I just grabbed some stock art from somewhere and threw a title on it and called that my book cover.
Yeah.
And I just feel like you're sort of changing yourself and those precious words.
Yeah. It's, you know, and that it reflects, you know, on the book, you know, too. And when they see, you know, if they read it and it's really bad, I mean, if it hasn't been edited well, if it's not proofed and there's, you know, 20 errors in the first two pages, and, you know, that they're not going to come back and look for you again, you know. So if you put out a really good product and it's professional and it's as good as anything they could have bought anywhere else, they're going to, you know, start looking for you. They're going to start following you on different, you know, social media or at BookBub or Amazon or wherever they shop. And they're going to, you know, they're going to come back and look again. Like, they'll see, oh, she's got a new book. Then let me go check it out. You know, even when I wrote a new series that wasn't what they were used to, a lot of readers are like, you always put out a good book. I don't care what you write. You know, I'm going to get it. So they, you know, they'll transition. They'll follow you anywhere if you've proven to them that they're going to get a quality product and that, you know, that book is going to suck them in and, you know, grab their hearts and, you know, make them fall in love again or whatever. You know, it's like if you prove that you can do that, you know, then they'll keep coming back. But if you start out putting out stuff that's just not up to par, you're going to lose a lot of people, you know, right off the bat. And you really can't afford to do that. You know, it's hard enough to get readers, you know, to stick with you. So it's like, you don't want to shoot yourself in the foot.
Well, I think those are excellent words. And while I don't want to shoot myself in the foot, it is time to take the ever-loving commercial break. Yes, even in bills, there are, in radio, there are bills to pay. So I will pour Callie a cup of coffee, and we will take that commercial break, and I will see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Spark Radio Network, internet radio like you've never heard before. Innovation, creativity, and imagination are all said to begin with a spark. So fasten your seatbelt and take the ride of your life and listen for the spark.
You are listening to KLRN Radio, where liberty and reason still reign.
Most writers and radio show hosts know that to connect with your fans, you need to do more than just write books or record the latest podcasts. There are many different elements that go into forming an online platform, but there are also many hidden traps. To make matters worse, solid advice on how to survive the muddy waters is scarce. In the book Hidden Traps, I talk about some of the important issues of working with an online platform, highlighting traps that could put your physical or internet security at risk, or be harmful to your reputation. Are your social media posts just links with a few disjointed words making you look like someone who can't complete a sentence? Did your new website cost you more than you anticipated? Are you leaking your personal contact details across the web without even knowing it? Then you need Hidden Traps. Hidden Traps is now available in paperback and ebook from a variety of retailers, including Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Kobo. Visit blackwolfpublications.com for more details.
KLRN Radio has advertising rates available. We have rates to fit almost any budget. Contact us at advertising@klrnradio.com.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-783-0810 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-783-0810. Again, that's 800-783-0810.
Sometimes writers feel lost, unsure why a passage may not be working. It takes another set of eyes to help us nurture our writing into full maturity. At Black Wolf Editorial Services, we strive to enable writers to develop and grow, offering manuscript critiques and line edits through a mentoring editorial style. We also offer assistance on generating a writer's bio for your websites. Black Wolf Editorial Services, nurturing your writing into maturity. For a full list of services, visit blackwolfeditorial.com.
I thank y'all for hanging in there with us while we paid those radio station bills. and I will refresh my coffee. And yes, Callie is still with us. Now, Callie, what is your favorite coffee shop treat?
I like any kind of baked good that I shouldn't have, being diabetic, but cinnamon rolls or scones, I don't care. I love herbal tea, so I might have scones and tea or something like that. But yeah, anything that's bad for me is good, so.
Sounds great. Always got to sneak that question in somewhere. Now that we've gotten coffee shop treats out of the way, how do you come up with the plots that appear in these books? I mean, you've written so many and so many diverse ones. How do you develop your plot? Are you one of those outliners, or are you a pantser, or how do you do it?
I am 100% pantser. I rarely write down anything. In the saga, I actually made it a saga because I knew I wasn't going to tie everything up at the end of a book and things would have to be resolved later. And I didn't know what I would need to resolve later until it came up later. So I kept myself, if I called it a saga, I could kind of keep it open-ended. And even though they get happy endings at the end of each book, I knew that I could bring up, you know, issues and just plunk them back into the next book or a later book and, you know, not have any problems. But I don't write linearly. I just write whatever is on my brain at the time. If the characters are, you know, having a dialogue in my head, I write that, and then I try to figure out about where in the book this would go. I have done nothing with an outline or any kind of plot. I've never written a synopsis because I never had to submit it to an agent or a publisher, and that's about the only reason I can imagine you would write one. But, I mean, I know plotters would write one, but it's not something I need or do. So I just basically, I just write whatever I'm seeing and feeling, and then, put it in either Word or Scrivener, whichever program I'm using, and just start fleshing it out and asking questions and trying to figure out where to go from here or how did I get to here and can write before and after. And in my head, it all eventually comes out like it's one long story or movie or something. And it just flows, and I know kind of what I need to address this before that. And I have really good editors who will tell me too that, I feel like we need, to find out how did he get to here? There's like a big gap here. Like something happened that, we need to show the readers how that change of thought or mindset came about. And so they help me to fill in places where, it might be okay, clear in my head, but not to the reader. So that's another thing I use, while we go through several stages of edits, is that they can help me to find places where I need to explain why did this happen, and to go back and fill it in or explain it or give a reason or cause for something. But I'm going to do something different this month because I'm making plans to do a trilogy. That's going to be a romantic suspense. Ooh. With some of my secondary characters from Roar, which was my last book before I started this series. So anyway, so I thought, well, if I'm going to have a romantic suspense, there's going to have to be a suspense element that arcs over three books. And I didn't want to wait until the last book to put out the first one, because it takes me anywhere from 6 or 8 months to 15 months to get a book done. So I don't want to make readers wait that long. And they've really been waiting for these three characters. So I thought, well, I will just sit down with some friends out in California. One's a writer and one's a reader of both mine and hers. And that she's really good at brainstorming and plotting. So I thought, well, I'm going to plot the suspense part of it, which will involve Afghanistan and going in and, dealing with the Taliban and all this. And so I've kind of set it up some in Roar, but I'll flesh it out there. But I thought I don't plot the romance because that just has to flow naturally for me. But the suspense, like how much of it is going to happen in this book and what happens next, that carries it over, so that the suspense element won't be resolved until the end of the third book. But each couple gets their happy ending at the end of each book. But then they're kind of all enmeshed in the same suspense plot.
By the way.
So anyway.
I love repeat guests in the coffee shop. You best be planning a visit back to the coffee shop when you've got this out.
Okay. Maybe a year and a half or I don't know.
I'm a very patient person.
Okay. Well, I am too. My readers are extremely patient, but they always say they're impatiently waiting, but anyway, it's my first time at doing any kind of an outline. So we'll see what happens, how closely I'll stick to it. But if I start putting the books out, I will have to stick to that part, that element of it anyway, the suspense part. But I want to keep myself open because the characters, when they come to life in the, you know, in the scenes, and they do things that I would never have, you know, if I plotted them out, it would be such a boring story. But I let them just kind of come to life and do what they want to do. And sometimes it's not, you know, easy stuff, and it's not things that I could just, you know, write my way out of. So I have to really struggle to get through whatever they come up with. But it makes for a better story. So and it's obviously more realistic because it's what they came up with. So, you know, I do have voices in my head, and they do come to life. And then I'm one of those crazy writers. But, you know, but it's, you know, makes for a really good story, I think, to let them kind of take over and do what they want. So I let the romance go where it's going to go, wherever, and good and bad. I don't have perfect characters who figure things out. Sometimes they make really good decisions, and, you know, they have to deal with that, you know. And I had a lot of that in Kate's Secret, where she had made some really, really dumb decisions, and, you know, now they've got to try to figure out, you know, where to go from there. But some readers are, you know, have a real problem with the way she was. But I said, well, it is what it is, you know. And we're not all perfect people, and we don't always make, you know, wise decisions. But, you know, showing how someone that did make a lot of dumb decisions can come to grips with that and then turn it into a happy ending, too, I think that's kind of an empowering thing, too, for people that do make mistakes and aren't perfect. And
I don't know a human being that is perfect.
Exactly.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Exactly. And so why should our romance characters be that? If we want to write realistically, which I do, you know, why would we want them to be perfect? You know, it's not realistic. So anyway, I sometimes have characters that the readers are screaming at, you know, for whatever reason, because they're doing something that they just don't like. But, you know, it's real life to me. So,
Callie, you've mentioned interacting with your fans on numerous occasions. You've also mentioned social media. How did you go about developing your online writers platform? Did you do it before you published? Did it grow as you were publishing? And how has it morphed and changed over its existence?
Okay, I started out strictly Facebook. I think I had a Twitter account, which I used a little bit, but Facebook in 2011, Calypso was born in May 2011, and I think by the time my first book came out, I had 695 friends, and 200 were readers or were writer friends. So I had gone on there and just started posting, like, you know, like as if I were the characters that I was writing about, and I would write, you know, things that they were thinking, what they were doing in a particular scene I was working on, and just kind of brought them to life. And readers, by the time that the book came out, they were like, I cannot wait to read about these people I've been reading about all summer, you know. So I kind of, you know, involved them in the process of creating the characters. And I don't want to say creating them, because to me, they just kind of come to me and I tell their stories. But anyway, bringing those characters to life for readers, you know, had started months before the book actually came out. So, you know, I just kept building. I think I've been like at the max or the near max of friends you can have on Facebook, like at 5,000 or something. I've been there for like years, because I never like totally max out, because then they'll stop letting people friend me. But anyway, it's just kind of like I've had a lot of, you know, a lot of friends there and followers now, and but I didn't have a website, I didn't have an author page, I didn't have any of the other kind of marketing type things. It was strictly a profile page on Facebook, and I would talk with them. Now, these were the days when Facebook would let posts go to everybody that you were friends with, but now it's gotten really hard, and they suppress things, especially if it looks like you're trying to sell something or you're a writer or whatever. So it's gotten to be really difficult for readers to find you unless they specifically go look at your page or your author profile or whatever. You know, they're not going to probably see most of what I print. And then I'm having an issue with things disappearing. So Facebook has become not like the most reliable way of connecting. And I'm also an extroverted writer, which is unusual, but I love to meet readers. And so I started, I think the first one I did was 2012, which was probably within the first year of when I was writing. I started going to conventions or conferences to meet readers. And when there wasn't one, if I was just traveling, I would just post on Facebook, I am in whatever city, I'm having dinner with whoever wants to show up. And people would come and we would just talk about books for the evening. I did these in Tennessee and I don't want to start naming places, but anywhere I would just happen to be traveling. I would just post and people would show up. And so we call those dinners with Callie. And so I've over the years, since 2012, I have had some kind of event, either a signing or a conference or some meeting with readers in 30 states, or the 30th one actually will be in Oregon in a couple of weeks.
Wow, but, wait a minute here. I thought you said you were no good at marketing. You seem to have found your niche.
But see, I don't know that sells me a lot of books because these people already bought them. It's just I want to sit with them and talk about them and what do they think of them. You know, I can do that online, but it's just meeting the readers and talking with them and hearing their stories and how my stories impacted them. And, you know, it's just, we feed off each other, but I'm being an extrovert. I feed off of whatever, you know, but it's just, you know, I just love it. So then it's morphed into where I have an annual CalypsoCon, which I move around the country to places that, you know, I'm trying to hit all 50 states. So I moved to different states and have it in different places. The next one will be next year in Salt Lake City. And just did one in Canada. So I'm actually starting on the provinces now. But, you know, I have a lot of readers, you know, internationally. I had 4 people from Australia come to that one, you know. So,
amazing.
So, yeah, it just kind of feeds my soul or something. But getting together with them, and then I usually bring in a very small group of author friends, and usually it's people I know and who write well and do it professionally and all of those good things. But I like to bring them in, and some of them are bigger stars than I am, and some are not quite as far along as I am. And we kind of, you know, all like might be 6 or 7 or 10, 11 at the most. The most I've ever had is 11 authors. So it's very small, but you know, I get to introduce them to the readers that, you know, come, and you know, just kind of help each other build our fan base. And I have authors all the time are like, please invite me back, you know. And it's really hard because it's like I have such a small number. It's like I need to get different authors at each, you know, each one, so I can't have the same authors at each time I do a theme or whatever. But anyway, so I, you know, I do any kind of thing where I can like connect with readers is great. And that actually next let me pause here a minute. I keep mentioning like next week or 2 weeks, but that's going to be past.
Month and year.
Okay, let's do. We'll say in September 2017, I am doing a sightseeing tour of Southern California, and I will take readers to the places that I've written about in my early books. And then I do these every 2 years. I've done one in Colorado. I did one in Southern California before. And then in 2019, I want to do one in Kentucky, and that will be for the Jesse's Hideout and Kate's Secret, the Bluegrass Spirit series, and I'll take them to places that I write about in that series. And I do a lot of spotlighting Kentucky in that series, you know, favorite restaurants and foods. And in the previous book, I even had a recipe section, which had lots of family recipes because the woman was running a bed and breakfast, and I just had her making all these dishes that were very popular in that area. The house on that cover, the previous book, is one that my dad, it was in my dad's hometown, and he always said Jesse James used to hide out there. And so I wrote this whole book called Jesse's Hideout, and she's got a bed and breakfast called Jesse's Hideout Bed and Breakfast. And so, you know, but I love these little tours, and I love doing my CalypsoCon and anything, even just the dinners, you know, with 10 people show up, or I've had some where one person showed up, but it doesn't matter. You know, it's just, we have really good conversation and just talk about the books, not just my books, but books that they're reading. And so I really have a really strong connection with my readers. And I know for some authors, that's like scary. Like they don't, they're introverted, and just getting out in public, you know, talking to readers or other writers even, you know, it's kind of scary, but I'm really lucky that, you know, that's just, I love to do that, probably too much, because it takes up like most of my income goes to going back out and meeting readers, you know, but it's what I love to do. And I love to travel. So I've mixed them together and do both. But
all right. Well, that brings up another interesting debate I've been having offline with a few writer friends. Now, as everyone who's listened to Jesse's Coffee Shop before knows, I'm not a writer. I'm a reader.
That's okay. We love readers.
But how do you handle, if you get a negative review on Amazon or a negative review on fill in the blank, how do you handle that? Is that something you just accept and move on? Or how do you handle that? Do you reply to it?
In the beginning, I probably replied more than I should. But, I don't know. I've learned over the years, and it does take some time, I guess, but I've learned over the years that not everyone is going to love every book. Even if they're fans of all my other books, they're not going to love, you know, the new ones or whatever. You know, it's a subjective thing. And just because they don't love it doesn't mean it's bad. It just means that they didn't connect with it. For whatever reason, it wasn't the book for them. I think the only ones that really bug me is that when I read the review and it's like one star, and it's like, I hate this topic, you know, and I couldn't even read it. So like, why are you reviewing a book you didn't read? You know, so, and of course you can't take those down, so they're there, but I figure readers are pretty savvy, and so they can read that and see, why does the person have an opinion because they didn't even read it? I try not to respond to them anymore. And, you know, I don't even like call them out. Like some people will be like, oh, I got this one star review, look at this, you know, and talk about it on social media, because I figure, well, they may be reading that, you know. So I've kind of learned that you just let it go. It's, you know, one person's opinion, and if they like it, fine. If they don't, fine, you know. I do read them, because, you know, you just can't keep yourself from reading them. I will say I did stop reading Goodreads, because their reviews, it was like they could review a book that's not even out yet. So I had like, you know, a one star on a book that still hasn't been written. But, you know, I finally got that taken down. But it was, you know, it's just kind of like, okay. I guess that my big issue is don't review a book you didn't read, you know, if you don't like the topic. And also, I guess I would say too, just because, it, you know, if you did read it and the topic wasn't what you, you know, believe or your cup of tea or whatever, you know, I mean, review the writing, you know, and how it affected you or whatever, or didn't affect you. But, you know, to don't make it personal to the author, or, you know, make it personal that, you know, that you're trashing them because they write such things or whatever, you know, because, you know, it's, I mean, you should review the book, you know, for itself. And
I think that,
or your response.
I think that is excellent feedback for both writers and readers. Now,
but I love reviews. I mean, I love them good, bad, and ugly. But, you know, but it I mean, they're, if someone has cared enough that they've read the book and they have an opinion or they want to share their thoughts about it, then I love that they will review it, you know. And it may not be a 5-star or a 4-star, you know, it could be a 2 or a 3. And I, you know, I read those just as well. And sometimes I get feedback in those that, you know, either helps me to understand why that book didn't connect with them, or might even, you know, open my eyes to something that I didn't see. Or, but, you know, but we love when readers will take the time to leave a review. And so many of them are so afraid that they don't know how to write a review And, you know, it's like, or that they write like the fifth grade book report reviews, you know, where they tell the whole plot, you know, and, you know, it's kind of like, but the heart, the ones with heart are the ones where they just tell what the book, you know, how it affected them or what they felt when they were reading it, or, you know, they, it's not so much a critique of the writing style or any of that, you know, it's more just what was your connection to this book and how did you feel about it? And, you know, when you finished and, you know, those kind of, you know, from the heart type of reviews are just, they're wonderful. And readers, you know, writers are so happy to get to read that feedback. You know, we hear it from some of our readers, but not everybody will contact us. So, you know, it's kind of just great for us to get to see what people thought about as they read the book or whatever. Well, so I love reviews. So I don't want to say I want to discourage anybody from leaving.
Kelly, full disclosure, Jesse never leaves reviews. But if I have comments or feedback, I usually approach especially the authors who've been on the coffee shop privately, because I don't want Jesse's coffee shop to ever be associated with a review, good, bad, or indifferent.
Well, that's probably a good policy. I don't leave reviews either, because a lot of times they don't like authors to leave reviews, but I don't either. But I do let people know if I love their book, or I probably don't let them know if I hated it, but I do let people know if I really connected with a book and loved it. So,
all right.
Well, I just do that personally though. But yeah.
As I do with everyone at the end of a coffee shop episode, I always give them the chance to give out all their social media contact information. So why don't you take advantage of that now?
Okay. Well, I'll make it simple. I'm pretty much Calypso Masters everywhere. I think on Google Plus, I'm Cali Masters, just the K-A-L-L-Y. But yeah, if you search for Calypso Masters, K-A-L-L-Y-P-S-O Masters,
and your
will probably find me. And my website is calypsomasters.com. I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, and Google Plus, and Goodreads, Amazon, BookBub, pretty much anywhere that they have places where we can have author pages, you'll probably find me. I'm most active on Facebook, and I'm starting to move towards Google Plus a little bit because it's more stable right now, But anyway, yeah, anywhere, you know, follow me, friend me. If Facebook says I have too many friends, just send me a private message, because sometimes they'll let me friend you even though they won't let you friend me. And then I will send you a friend request. But I do still have spots open there, you know. It's just, and I have an author page also on Facebook, and that's unlimited. Anybody wants to like it can like it. And I am using that more actively now too. And so, yeah, anywhere, I'd love to engage with readers. So, you know, send me messages, send me emails, calypsomasters@gmail.com, or through my website, or just anywhere. But I'm it's pretty easy to find me. I don't have any code words or anything like that to my usernames anywhere. So,
all right. Well, I'd like to thank you for being in the coffee shop, and it is time for me to pour myself another cup of coffee.
And thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. I've enjoyed this very much.
You are most welcome. And now I'm going to grab Kate's Secret off the table and sit down and read a great book. And I will see you folks next time in the coffee shop.